but it was nothing like this. When she'd tried to pry for more information about his powers in those first few days, Yoshi had claimed very little ever warranted the wolf's wrath.
"In order to hate, one must first love," the cook had said. And Okami did not love many things.
Before Akira-san could say anything more, Ranmaru came crashing through the burned brush toward them. He skidded to a halt, his face pale. Akira-san reached for the leader of the Black Clan, and Ranmaru flew to the old man's side, clasping his bloodied hand tight.
Akira-san's eyes traveled to Mariko. They narrowed. His breaths were becoming shallow and fast.
Find the dragon, he said haltingly.
Mariko's pulse came to a sudden standstill.
An icy vice gripped her chest, tore through the bindings wound about her breastbone.
The dragon? Ranmaru asked.
Find the dragon of Kai.
He coughed, lines of crimson spurting from his lips. Then he raised a trembling finger as though he meant to point at something.
Or someone.
Mariko could not hear over the sound of her heart's screams.
It's not possible. This isn't possible.
Akira-san's hand fell as his eyes drifted shut, as the life left his body. Mariko's hand flew to her throat, and her mind was sent into a whirl.
Kenshin.
Her brother. Her family.
What have you done?
Smoke shields and sorrow. Mariko turned to her work to keep the world around her from falling apart. She listened while Ranmaru raged about the Dragon of Kai, listened as he ordered the rest of his men to begin making inquiries as to where Hattori Kenshin might be. As to why Hattori Kenshin would murder an innocent old man and his two young grandchildren in cold blood. Had Kenshin really done this? Mariko asked herself this question many times, too many times to count.
Why would Kenshin do such a thing?
The most disturbing part about its answer was that she could not be sure on either score. Her brother had always been a man of honor, a man who followed the way of the warrior to the letter. Bushido drove Kenshin as it drove few other men of Mariko's acquaintance. In order for a man who valued honor and chivalry as Kenshin did to slaughter innocent, unarmed people, he must have had a good reason. He had to have one. But as much as Mariko struggled to come up with it, she could not. Ultimately, it was because she knew there could be no good reason. When she overheard the plans Ranmaru had begun to make, to find the Dragon of Kai and kill him with 1,000 cuts, Mariko felt the horror take shape in her soul. And she knew she had to form a plan. At least do something more than sit and worry in silence. If Ranmaru sent the Black Clan after her brother, Kenshin would have to fight. He might die. She did not doubt her brother could hold his own against most of the members of the Black Clan, but not against Okami. Mariko had to create something to help her brother stave off the wolf's inevitable onslaught. After all, a predator needed to see its prey in order to catch it. Okami had been decidedly quiet through all of Ranmaru's rages. If possible, he'd been even more detached than usual. He did not laugh with Mariko anymore. Instead, Okami resumed his disappearances from camp, this time leaving every day, likely journeying to Inako to see his sister Yumi. Not that Mariko minded. That fear, that burgeoning worry, drove her to remain apart from all the conversations taking place around her, drove her to avoid Okami for the few moments they ever crossed paths in camp. Avoid him as he avoided her, at all cost. Mariko burrowed into her tasks instead. Today she sat outside Haruki's smithy, gingerly filling empty eggshells. The idea had come to her after an anxious dream, one in which she'd watched Yoshi remove eggs from their casings, leaving the shells intact, hollow. Then the shells had dissolved into smoke, concealing him from view.
Mariko had woken suddenly and begun to consider. A trail of smoke would be an excellent way to conceal a retreat, or perhaps even conceal an entrance, especially if the smoke did not precipitate an actual fire. Smoke was the first sign of a blaze. It usually sent those around it into a panic to find its source, a panic that would help to conceal a marauder's trail. The next day, Mariko had borrowed a mortar and pestle from Yoshi. She'd begun grinding powders, almost feverishly. First, she'd started with a basic mixture. She'd taken the smelly yellow rocks from the nearby hot springs and ground them into powder. Then she'd mixed them with dried pitch and tried to get them to form a mold in the eggshell. As could be expected, the stinking disaster had fallen apart in her hands before it could even catch flame. Then, Mariko had recalled something Yoshi had taught her during one of her many lessons about mundane things. An excellent source of tinder was dried animal dung. He'd proven this when he'd taught her how to light a fire. So she'd mixed equal parts dried horse dung with the yellow rocks and the pitch, grinding them all into a fine powder. The final addition of soot from Haruki's smithy had stabilized the mixture and made it less noxious to work with. The last task left to Mariko was to create a mold, thus the eggshells. She needed something that would encase the powders in an almost crystalline structure, make them easy to transport without falling apart or setting them off at the nearest brush of heat. Yesterday, Mariko had remembered the dragon's beard candy and how the sweet Amazura syrup used to make it hardened when left too long away from the fire. So she'd taken Amazura syrup from Yoshi and let it melt over a low flame. She'd waited until it hardened before grinding it into a powder, dusted it across the inside of the eggshell, then left it near the heat once more to form a shell within the eggshell, a reinforcement that made the eggshells themselves far sturdier. If this experiment didn't work, she had to start from the beginning. Mariko carefully measured out the three different powders in the three containers at her feet. She poured each into the eggshell lined with Amazura glaze. Then she stood. As she'd learned early on when mixing these powders, friction caused them to react with one another and form a cloud of smoke. She rattled the egg twice before throwing it hard on the ground. It burst with a loud bang. A white smoke rose from the ground, smelling faintly of burnt eggs and horse dung. Tolerable if one ran away quickly. At least in one thing, Mariko was not a complete failure. "I'm impressed," Ranmaru said when Mariko showed him the final product. His hand waved through the smoke so that he could see her. Briefly, Mariko considered what it meant that she was providing her enemy, her brother's enemy, with the means to conceal himself from view. Alas, it was too late to hide her success, and, as far as she was concerned, the more smoke, the better. She'd begun working on this project before the events that had transpired in the clearing, when Mariko had wished to earn a place in the Black Clan's inner circle. The only thing that saved her from feeling extreme guilt was the knowledge that she had not shared all she'd learned from her experiments. She had no intentions of giving Ranmaru her greatest invention yet. Despite what her brother had done in Jukai Forest, she would help Kenshin best his enemies in whatever way she could. Mariko steeled herself. The first chance she had, she would learn the reason Kenshin had murdered so many innocents. After everything she'd experienced while living amongst the Black Clan, she knew appearances could be deceiving, and she wished to give her brother the benefit of her trust, at least for the time being. "How many smoke shields can you make?" Ranmaru asked. Mariko hedged. "It's time-consuming." "I'll send men to help you. Ren and Yoshi will appreciate learning how to do this. And taking note of my ingredients, as well as seeing what else I am concocting." "I prefer to work alone," Mariko said. "It's dangerous handling the powders, and an untried hand could set fire to the entire camp." Ranmaru remained unyielding. "Then train them to handle the powders properly.
I don't have the time to train them and make the smoke shields.
Why don't you tell me what you need, and I will provide it.
The leader of the Black Clan's unflinching nature was becoming increasingly problematic.
Ranmaru rarely saw problems. He saw only solutions, and his eternal optimism grated on her nerves now more than ever.
Mariko thought quickly. Even if she disclosed the ingredients, none of the members of the Black Clan could ever duplicate the amounts. Not without weeks of study. And she would never tell them how she'd managed to harden the inside of the eggshell. The yellow rocks near the hot springs, dried horse dung, and ash from Haruki's forge.
And foxglove. A voice emanated from behind her.
Okami.
Foxglove?
Ranmaru said with a quizzical expression. As in the poison?
Mariko refrained from grimacing.
It's true. I have foxglove, but... Okami stepped before her.
Don't try to fool us, Lord Lackbeard, he said in a flat tone. If you didn't use it for the smoke shields, then why did you need to gather it?
Again she thought quickly. I used foxglove sap to line the inside of the eggshells. Another lie, threaded from truth. Once again, Mariko recalled the experiment her tutor had performed when she was younger. When the paste from the foxglove stems and seeds had flashed a brilliant light, Mariko had realized early on that if she did in fact add the paste to the smoke shield, it would likely explode, not just emit smoke and fumes. Alas, she'd not yet had an occasion to test her greatest invention yet.
Interesting, Ranmaru commented. Okami turned toward her, his face tense, as though he could smell the scent of her lies.
Quite.
Very well, Ranmaru said. We shall provide you with the ingredients. Can you make 50 smoke shields in the next 5 days?
I can try.
Excellent, he grinned. How are your lessons progressing in learning to fight with a sword?
They aren't, she admitted. I've been spending most of my time working on this.
Partially true, but in actuality it was difficult to pursue any training when one's supposed master was never present in the same place as his student. It's important you continue practicing, Ranmaru watched her as he spoke. Because if you're successful in making these smoke shields, I'd like for you to accompany us on our next raid.
Mariko blanched.
I thought you would be pleased, Ranmaru said.
Again, Mariko felt Okami's eyes bore through her skull.
I am pleased.
Ranmaru frowned.
You don't sound as though you are.
May I ask where we are planning our next raid?
A land not too far from here, Ranmaru answered. One that desperately deserves our intervention.
Okami glanced down at her.
The province of the Hattori clan.
Mariko's head began to swim, her earliest suspicions confirmed. Though it did not make the words any easier to hear, the wolf continued.
The way to draw out a dragon is by threatening its lair.
Despite the pounding between her temples, Mariko kept her voice calm, unaffected.
Do we know why he attacked Akira-san? She asked Okami, desperate to cling to the first source of her hatred.
The first... and most lasting. Tell me you were there that night. Tell me you were the ones to attack my convoy. Tell me you tried to kill Hattori Mariko and her brother is seeking revenge against the Black Clan for it. Tell me so I can destroy you and never once look back.
It doesn't matter why he did it, Okami said. It only matters that he did.
Believe in actions and actions alone. But Kenshin had to have his reasons. Mariko needed to believe he would never do something like this without a reason. Needed to believe it despite all the evidence to the contrary.
Why would anyone murder someone without a reason? She said.
Men like that don't need a reason, Okami replied.
Ranmaru sighed. You will see when we go to the Hattori province. You will see why it is that the Emperor has failed his people... by putting men like Hattori Kano in power.
Our emperor is not strong. He is weak and manipulative. Far more concerned about his own status than he is about the greatness of the empire. If Minamoto Masaru truly cared about his country, he would know its strength lies with its people. And the people of Wa follow those who bring about the glory of our empire. It's time to return power to those with the will to rule. Ranmaru continued, with a strong arm and a unified heart. Mariko knew she could not say much. If she spoke out of turn, her words would reveal her sentiments, and her heart could not take any more pain. Not now. You wish for power to be taken from the Emperor? The leader of the Black Clan looked to his friend.
Okami, Ranmaru wishes for power to return to the Shogun.
The wolf finished. Which Shogun? Mariko asked. I thought the line of the Shogun had died out years ago.
Okami's gaze pierced hers. He spoke softly. The last in line to be Shogun was Takeda Shingen's son.
Ranmaru. So you fight?
Mariko swallowed as she studied Okami.
You fight to restore military power to Ranmaru?
Okami said nothing. The only reason I fight is out of loyalty to my clan, the Black Clan, and all those we serve. If Ranmaru wishes to be Shogun, then I will do whatever is in my power to help him, but I have no designs beyond that.
It was possible Mariko had finally stumbled on the truth. Did the Black Clan have designs on restoring Takeda Ranmaru, a Ronin, to the seat of power in Yedo? And, if so, how did a band of brigands intend to bring that about?
I told you, Sana, that Takeo would be useful to us one day, Okami, Ranmaru said, his smile tight, almost menacing. At that, Okami stormed past Mariko, back into the night. A Province of Pain. Kenshin dismounted from his horse outside the servant's gate. He was home, weary, wretched. His dreams plagued him. Ever since the day Mariko had disappeared, they'd kept him from having a restful night's sleep. They'd only worsened after he'd lost time beside the watering hole. Nightmares of an elderly man crying for help. Nightmares of a boy and girl thrashing through a sea of tall grass, blood spurting from their bodies in crimson founts. Kenshin banished the thoughts with a shake of his head. He passed through the rear gate of his family's home, his head bowed. He did not wish to speak to anyone, to see anyone, to allow anyone to see him. It wasn't the shame of his family knowing. His father would not reproach him on this particular score. After all, it wasn't a public failing. At most, Hattori Kano would offer the families of the victims some form of restitution. And Kenshin's mother, Tairahime, would likely frown at her son for losing his temper, then offer him food before letting the unpleasant incident fade from memory. The darkness covered him. Torchlight flickered from all corners of the compound. Kenshin's feet carried him automatically to a smaller building, recently re-roofed in clean, sweet-smelling straw. Without pausing to think, Kenshin sat beneath a window on the far right, leaned his back against the rough white plaster, hoping the nearness would comfort him. Even the whisper of a sliding door opening did not disrupt him from seeking solace. Kenshin did not look up when the shadow of a familiar figure fell upon him. Amaya said nothing. She merely sat beside him. After a time, Kenshin let his head fall to her shoulder.
"What's wrong?" she asked softly.
He did not reply.
"Kenshin."
"Your shoulder is uncomfortable." He picked up his head. Before he could move away, Amaya caught him by the chin.
"What is it?"
she repeated. "Your shoulder is too bony. You should eat more." She smiled.
"As should you."
He pressed his head into her shoulder again.
"I thought you said it was uncomfortable,"
Amaya teased. She reached for his hand, lacing her fingers through his. It's uncomfortable because you're resting your head. Rest your heart instead.
Kenshin swallowed, leaned into her warmth, let his worries fade, if only for an instant.
I've made a terrible mistake, he whispered.
The Black Clan rode to a halt on the edges of the Hattori province. Twilight had fallen. The drone of cicadas cut through the air, the smell of barley and grain suffusing the night sky. Mariko's heart thundered in her chest. She needed to warn her family, to warn Kenshin what was about to happen. She glanced sidelong at Okami. "Why are we here to raid and ransack these people?" Mariko asked in an even tone. "They have not done anything to you."
"We are not here to raid and ransack them," he said. "We are here to..."
His head tilted to one side.
"Redistribute."
"Excuse me?"
"Hattori Kano has been robbing the people who live and work on his land for years."
"What?" Mariko exclaimed, the fine hairs on the nape of her neck rising. "I've never heard..."
"He lives well beyond his means, and he was recently robbed of his daughter's dowry, a dowry he stole from his people in order to buy his way into influence."
"A lie?" Mariko opened her mouth to refute his words, to defend her family's honor. But a creeping uncertainty began to slither across her body, the tiniest seed of doubt.
Hattori Kano was not a bad man,
even if he had sold his only daughter to further his own prominence. It was not unusual for a man in her father's position to do such a thing. It was true Hattori Kano had always wished for Mariko to be different, wished for her to forswear her childish wishes and be more than what she was. Those had been his last words to her. But he had not been a bad father. He'd cared for Mariko, provided her guidance and attention. A man like this wouldn't rob his own people blind, not simply for the sake of gaining a foothold in Heian Castle. Nevertheless, the seed of doubt took root in Mariko's mind. Her father had traded his only daughter for the barest measure of influence, not even a seat in the imperial court, and her mother had never once objected. If her father was taking more than his fair share of his people's crops, her mother would not say anything. Her brother would not know to pay attention. And Mariko? "I've been blind to so much. I've thought I possessed the truth so often, when in truth, I've possessed nothing."
"Do you not believe us?" Ranmaru said. "You look as though you do not."
"It's not that I don't believe you. It's that I can't believe a daimyo would be so careless with his own people."
Okami looked her way. "He is only following in the footsteps of his emperor."
"If the thought unsettles you, why don't you journey into the village nearby," Ranmaru said, "and see the truth for yourself."
"You would trust me?" Mariko asked.
"Of course not," Ranmaru grinned. "Take someone with you." Without thought, her eyes lifted to Okami's. Her heart made the choice for her. "Return by midnight," the leader of the Black Clan finished. "We will raid the granaries and storehouses then." "So this is what you do," Mariko pronounced it as a statement of fact. "This is the true work of the Black Clan, redistributing the wealth you steal to those less fortunate, like the woman in the Iwakura ward." Both she and Okami wandered through the edges of a village on the southern side of her family's province. He said nothing in response. "And you truly think your actions won't hurt the people of this province?" Mariko pressed.
"No," Okami said. "Just wound the pockets of Hattori Kano. And if the Dragon of Kai happens to be killed in the process, so be it."
Anguish knifed deep within Mariko's chest. She desperately wanted to protest, to offer some form of counter-argument. They did not even know if Kenshin was truly the one responsible for Akira-san's death. And yet, her mind descended in a whirl. The most Mariko could do was stay amongst the raiding party. Perhaps then she could find a way to warn one of her family's servants before it was too late. before the unthinkable occurred. And if it should occur anyway, Mariko had another weapon at the ready. She studied the expanse of land before them. Though the sun had already set, many women and children were still working the fields, cutting away any weeds and fending off the countless insects that always plagued the harvest. The golden stalks of rice were growing tall. Usually, Mariko loved the harvesting time. She would wander the fields and get lost among the many reaping baskets, drawing sketches in the mud and crafting new ideas in her mind. She focused on the best of these memories, on the people working in her periphery. They were never smiling, and she had never truly noticed. Okami and Mariko stayed to the shadows along the plastered buildings, beneath the thatched roofs, listening to the sounds of the workers as their children squabbled for food and their loved ones returned home from a wearying day's work. Okami paused beside a family gathering for their evening meal near a small fire just outside their tiny home. He handed Mariko a sickle and bade her to follow him into an adjoining field, as though they were workers intent on continuing their reaping. They squatted alongside the tall waves of grain, angling to one side to watch the family eat. In the distance, Mariko thought she saw the yellow eyes of a fox, lingering in the shadows, searching for scraps. The children were dirty. They smiled even though their meal was meager. It was clear their mother was injured. She limped as she went to scoop out tiny spoonfuls of millet. "Oka," the eldest girl said when her mother gave her a bowl of food. "You eat. I'm not hungry." Her eyes drifted to the fields of golden wheat, a mere stone's throw from where they sat, stretching as far as the eye could see. "No, my dearest. I've already had my meal." The woman glanced at her husband, willing him to stay silent. When the mother sat back down beside him, Mariko watched him quietly give her half his share. Thankfully, most of the other children did not notice. They smiled and carried on, oblivious to their parents' plight. But the eldest girl knew better. She pushed her bowl beside her parents and quietly began scooping some of her food into theirs. The sight startled Mariko, cut at something beneath her heart. For so many years, she had prided herself on being the girl who saw things no one else saw, who noticed the world not as it was, but as it should be. Her gaze drifted to the smiling faces of the other younger children present. At the face of the eldest girl and the tiniest grooves that now gathered above her brow. Mariko had countless fond memories of her childhood, and not a single one of them recalled anything but contentment at mealtime. "Perhaps my mind saw only what it wished to see." A cold hand of awareness took hold of her throat. In none of those memories could she remember seeing that same contentment in any of her father's workers. When Mariko had wandered past the gates of her family's home into the fields and paddies beyond, workers had often come to usher her away. The smiles they had given her had been wan, aged. As a child, she'd often asked why they looked sad, why they didn't smile more. Her mother had told her they were merely tired, and then her nursemaid had urged her back inside. This was the way of it. A daimyo owned the land his people worked. In exchange for their lord's protection and care, the people working the lands offered the daimyo tribute. Was it possible Hattori Kano took more than his fair share? Mariko recalled her father once saying how ungrateful his workers were, how he provided them with food and shelter and a place to work, and still they were unsatisfied. The Black Clan intended to redistribute her family's wealth back into the hands of those who worked the fields, tilled the soil, reaped the harvest. Also, Mariko could wear fine clothes and attract the attention of the Emperor's son. A part of her fought against the rightness of the sentiment, the rightness of seeing these people being granted their fair share. These were her family's people, her family's lands. But when had Mariko ever once planted a seed or worked in the dirt when it was not out of personal interest? Not until she'd come to the Black Clan's encampment had she even learned the basics of how to live on her own. Indeed, this was the first time in her life she had ever held a sickle. And even now it was for the purpose of subterfuge. As Okami had first pronounced that day, Mariko had been tasked with carrying firewood. She'd been useless. It was the truth of it all that had grated her nerves so thoroughly. How wrong it was that Mariko would fight so vehemently against accusations rooted in truth. Had Okami accused her of being lazy or slovenly or stupid, she would have laughed. But when he'd accused her of being useless, it had stung. Mariko wouldn't be useless now. She saw the truth. She could make her father see it, too. Even if they were wrong, they were still her family. No matter what it cost Mariko, she would warn her brother. Somehow. The Raid. They plan to raid the storehouses in the dead of night. That was all the servant had said to him. Kenshin had chased after the old man. When they'd rounded the corner, he'd grabbed him by his threadbare kosode, whirling him around. The old man's eyes were milky white. He was blind, or very nearly so. Kenshin had cursed to himself. "Do you know who told you this?"
"No, my lord," the old man stammered. "I was told to convey that message, then given a coin for it. That is all I know."
He spread his fingers wide as if to prove that was all he had in his possession. "And there was nothing further? Nothing about who intends to raid the storehouses?"
"No, my lord," the old man said. "It was said quickly, as I was passing by, as though the messenger did not have time to say anything more."
Kenshin removed his grip on the old man's kosode. Someone intended to rob his family, to steal from the stores that fed and clothed the people of his province, that supported the Hattori clan's rise to greatness. Without a second thought, he turned toward his family's garrison. Whoever they were, these thieves would not leave this valley alive. Mariko's hands shook as she waited beneath the straw awning. Okami leaned into the fall of shadows, watching for the signal. "You don't have to fight," he said softly. She turned toward him.
"You don't expect me to fight?"
"I have no expectations of you, or anyone else. I'm simply saying you don't have to do anything you don't wish to do." Though Okami's words held meaning, the cold precision with which he said them stung. Mariko did not wish to fight against any member of her family, or any of the samurai who bore them allegiance. She did not wish to partake in any of this destruction. But she could not ignore the chance to save lives. And strangely, a small part of her felt responsible for what might happen to Ranmaru, to Yoshi, even to Ren, and to Okami. The weapon she'd brought with her had the potential to cause damage beyond her wildest imagination. She'd never had an opportunity to test it, and thus had no idea what to expect. If something happened to Okami because of it? She banished the thought. He was a member of the Black Clan, likely one of the mercenaries who had been sent to kill her. Even if recent events had brought that truth into question, Mariko would never choose the wolf over her family, not if she lived 1,000 years. The call of a nightingale echoed through the darkness. The call that all was clear. Using his hands to form a cradle, Okami helped propel Haruki and Ren onto the straw rooftop above. He motioned for Mariko to follow. At the last second, he pulled her to him, chest to chest. "Don't be a hero. You'll make my life harder if you try," he said in a voice barely above a whisper, his eyes two flashing stones of onyx. Her breath caught. For a mad instant, Mariko thought to kiss him. "Do your job, Tsuneoka-sama. And I will do mine." She vaulted onto the roof, trying her best to keep her steps as light as those of Ren. Her heart pounded in her chest as she flattened against the straw, attempting to remain out of sight. Yoshi and Ranmaru moved like ghosts in the night toward the storehouse, toward the same granaries Mariko had played in as a child. There was no sign of anyone around. All was eerily silent. As Ranmaru fiddled with the latch of the storehouse, Ren grasped the edge of the roof, taking tight hold of the wooden frame before catapulting to the ground below. An arrow sailed from the darkness, striking Ren in the side. Mariko stifled a cry when she saw him fall. She thought to say something, to point out that they were under attack, but the words remained lodged in her throat. These were her enemies, her family's enemies, set to rob the Hattori clan. Even as she warred with herself, it soon became clear that Mariko did not need to say anything. Motion converged in the darkness. As soon as Ranmaru saw Ren fall, he and Yoshi folded into the shadows against the granary. Torches burst to life across the way, and the haunted, almost feral face of Hattori Kenshin glowed from the darkness. Fury roared through his body. One of Kenshin's men had loosed an arrow too soon. The men endeavoring to rob his family had been warned. There was nothing to be done for it. "Show yourselves," he demanded. The shadows remained still across the way. Kenshin unsheathed his katana, directing his men with a nod. Two foot soldiers whipped across the path, their backs hunched, their arrows knocked as they grabbed the fallen thief by the arms and hauled him before Kenshin. "Show yourselves, you cowards!" Kenshin shouted. The young man at his feet was no more than 20. He'd been shot in the side, the shaft of the arrow protruding from the folds of his black kosode. When no further signs of movement or sound emitted from the darkness, Kenshin pressed the tip of his foot to the young thief's ribs, just above his wound. The boy groaned, shuddered, then spat in the dirt beside Kenshin's sandal. "You miserable whore, son," he coughed. Kenshin leveled the tip of his katana at the boy's throat. "Who are you?" he demanded. "Tell me who you are, and you will die quickly, painlessly, with a measure of honor." The boy's laughter was harsh, almost maniacal. Kenshin pressed his foot down even harder. The boy cried out, then gritted his teeth. "What kind of loathsome, dishonorable man are you?" Kenshin yelled into the blackness. "That you would allow your man to suffer while you stand by watching idle." Sinister laughter emanated from beneath the awning of the granary. "I suppose that would make us nearly as loathsome as you, Hattori Kenshin. A noble samurai who tortures a wounded, helpless boy in an effort to provoke a reaction." Kenshin flinched. "You drove me to this. I expected nothing less from you. The Dragon of Kai." Kenshin could almost picture the faceless sneer accompanying the words. "That you would blame others for your own actions, as though you did not have a choice. Yet you claim to honor Bushido." The fury ignited once more beneath Kenshin's skin. "How dare you speak to me in this fashion? Who are you to dare?" Another voice tore through the night, this one softer, and yet infinitely more dangerous. "We are nothing. We are no one." Footsteps trudged through the darkness. A low hum began to form in the air around him, strange and full of malice. "And we are everywhere." From one side, a beast growled. Yellow eyes materialized in the shadows. The hum grew louder. Then, as if a giant fist had punched through the center of the earth, an explosion rocketed the entrance of the granary, and a wall of fire and earth rained down upon them. She'd done it to save Kenshin, done it to spare her brother. Mariko did not care what happened to Okami, did not care at all about Ranmaru, did not care that Ren lay wounded at her brother's feet. When she lit the fire gourd, when she rolled to the ground and tossed it before the entrance of the granary, when she provided a distraction enabling the Black Clan to escape. She had done it for Kenshin. Mariko shook herself into consciousness. Her head throbbed, She touched her ear and discovered a trail of warm blood trickling from its edge. Then she crawled on her hands and knees toward the safety of a toppled cart filled with chipped porcelain bowls. The explosion from the fire gourd had ripped the entrance off the front of the granary. Since the members of the Black Clan had been positioned along the back of the roof and against the sides, they had not been killed by the blast, but several of them had been knocked unconscious, just like Mariko. Screams echoed into the night as the granary caught flame. An arrow whistled by her, startling her into full awareness, sharpening the drone in her ears. Through the fire, she saw Kenshin swing his sword at a black blur. Her pulse thundered, her throat went dry. The black blur flashed to a sudden halt. Kenshin brandished his katana as Okami angled his bow to one side, ready to strike. "Get Ren!" Yoshi cried out from behind Mariko. Her family's servants barreled into the night, frantically searching for buckets, for bowls, for anything to staunch the rising flames. Mariko stood rigid, watching her brother make a decision. Watching Okami make a choice. Kenshin moved to attack as Okami hurtled into motion. Then, from her place beside the cart, Mariko saw Ren vanish in a smudge of darkness. Okami had rescued Ren instead of attacking Kenshin. In that moment, Mariko knew she, too, could not just sit here and watch others suffer. As she stood to help put out the fire, one of her family's foot soldiers caught sight of her. In this young man's eyes, she must look to be just another boy dressed in black. The soldier promptly knocked an arrow to his bow. Before she could think to do anything else, Mariko smashed a smoke shield at her feet, then dashed behind a cart. She unsheathed her tanto, her pulse on a tearing rampage. The arrow missed her, but the soldier barreled through the smoke, intent on cornering her. He raised his sword, and Mariko knew she had to fight. Had to stop him from firing any more arrows her way. Without hesitation, she tore from behind the cart and flew into his knees. He toppled to the ground, and Mariko raised her tanto, brandishing it in a threat. With a look of hatred, the soldier punched her in the face. Needles of light stabbed at her vision. Mariko grabbed her cheek as one eye welled with tears. The young soldier tried to stand. Mariko drove the tip of her tanto into his hand, pinning it to the earth. The sound of bone grinding against metal caused her to cringe. He screamed hoarsely, then grabbed her ankle when she attempted to run, knocking her back to the ground. They wrestled for his blade, and the soldier reached for the back of her kosode, trying to force her into submission. The fabric tore open just enough for him to see the muslin bindings around her breasts. His eyes widened in shock, then cut in unmitigated fury. "You bitch!" He tried to throttle her with his unpinned hand. "What kind of whore fights alongside murderers and thieves? Are you the Black Clan's whore? What kind of woman are you?" Mariko coughed, scratched at his face. The fingers of her other hand scrabbled across the ground, wrapping around smooth, cool porcelain. In one motion, she slammed a bowl into the soldier's head. He called her another filthy name as she sat astride him. He'd struck her. Her cheek felt shattered. This boy had tried to shoot her with an arrow, tried to strangle her. Mariko could kill him as he wished to kill her. She could kill him as she had that man in the forest. This soldier deserved to reap what he'd sown. Mariko drew back a fist and punched him in the face. When he spat at her, she punched him again. For all those times a man had caused her to feel fear, for all those times she'd been made to think something was wrong with her, for all those times she'd been forced to believe a girl was somehow less than a boy. She struck him again. He called her another filthy name, and her knuckles met his face once more. Soon she felt nothing in her fist.
Mariko?
A voice stuttered to her right. Just as she met the eyes of her brother, the roof of the granary collapsed on itself in a flurry of smoke and ash. And a dark shadow grabbed her and whirled into the night sky.
Kenshin!
Amaya yelled through a haze of smoke and a shower of sparks. It couldn't have been his sister. That scrawny boy with a face covered in a spray of crimson, beating one of his men to a bloody pulp, was not Hattori Mariko. Kenshin shook his head, trying to clear his vision.
Kenshin!
Amaya yelled again. He whirled around to see her splashing pails of water toward the burning granary.
There are workers trapped inside, she implored. They were trying to save some of our stores. If we don't rescue them, they will be burned alive.
Kenshin's father stumbled to a halt nearby. Get our men out, he ordered, smoothing the folds of his fine silk kimono while he spoke. Usually, Kenshin was the first to follow any order Hattori Kano doled out, without question. But in this instant, a part of Kenshin could barely register his father's words. He was still lost in the sight of only a moment ago, and he desperately wanted to seek out the crazed young man with a face so similar to that of his sister. Amaya shoved her hair from her damp forehead and barreled toward the granary. "What are you doing?" his father demanded. The fire blazed in Amaya's beautiful gray eyes.
"Our men are in there."
"And several servants." His father's face became stern. "Do not risk yourself for the servants. Try to save our soldiers. If you cannot, so be it." Her lip curled in disgust before she turned toward the burning granary, her head held high. Kenshin raced toward the fire, pushing his way through the smoke.
"Amaya!"
he called out. She was dragging a man from the flames. The sweat was already dripping from her forehead, drenching the collar of her kimono. Kenshin saw from the man's clothing that he was a servant. Amaya was working in express defiance of Hattori Kano's directive. In the corner, Kenshin caught sight of one of his father's samurai. The man was unconscious, with a wound to his head and a leg stuck beneath a splintered beam. He turned toward the samurai to help. Amaya called out,
"Help me, Kenshin!"
"Leave the servant," Kenshin replied. "Help me with Fumio-sama."
"Don't argue with me," Amaya said. "My father wants..." "I don't care what your father wants. Help me save this man. Help me save this life."
Kenshin heaved a breath, his eyes wild. Then he grabbed hold of the servant's shoulders and stumbled away from the blaze. His father waited outside, every part of his body tense with fury. Before Hattori Kano could say a word, Kenshin and Amaya fended off the blaze once more and, together, managed to lift the splintered beam and pull Fumio-sama to safety. Another side of the granary bowed inward, consumed by flames. "That's enough, Amaya," Kenshin said, his voice coarse from the smoke.
"There are still two more people inside, a woman and a young boy who works in the granary. We have to help them. They became trapped because they were trying to put out the fire."
She spun to make her way back toward the blaze, undeterred. "No," Kenshin grabbed her by the wrist. Amaya's eyes were pleading.
"We have to save them."
"Do not risk yourself," his father argued. "The entire structure will collapse at any moment." Kenshin hesitated. "Amaya." With a look of pure revulsion, she returned to the fire. Kenshin's father took hold of his shoulder, keeping him still, keeping him beyond the reach of any danger. Again, Kenshin hesitated before firming his resolve. He could not leave Amaya to fight through the blaze herself. The moment he tore himself free from his father's grasp, the walls of the granary buckled. Without a second thought, Kenshin sprinted toward the roaring fire. It took three of his father's soldiers to hold him back. "She's gone," Hattori Kano yelled. Kenshin stared at the blaze until his eyes burned. "What a foolish waste of life," his father said before walking away. My name is Mariko. Okami let himself be sick, let himself empty his stomach until there was nothing left. And still the shaking did not stop. Still, he felt the cold sweat sliding down his back. He'd never flown this far before, never carried a burden like this before. In the distance behind him, he could see the flames, hear the shouts, the burning granary and its many victims. Okami could only hope the Black Clan had vanished back into the woods, letting the thick veil of night conceal them from prying eyes. He hoped Ranmaru had been able to take Ren with him. hoped all his brothers in the Black Clan were spared the effects of that sudden explosion. When Okami had finished emptying his stomach, he wiped his mouth. Though he continued to tremble, he heaved his unconscious burden across his shoulders again. This girl. This wretched, wretched girl. This wicked liar. Mariko. Her name was Mariko. Okami had watched the Dragon of Kai see her. Heard Hattori Kenshin call to her with a familiarity that could not be mistaken for anything else. In truth, Okami was glad she'd passed out from the force of being hurled through the sky, carried by nothing but wind and smoke. Or perhaps it was a combination of several elements. The explosion this wretched girl had undoubtedly caused, along with being heaved beneath the clouds. Whatever the case, Okami could not bear to speak to her, to watch more lies fall from her rosebud lips. He had to figure out what to do first. Hattori Kenshin knew who this girl was. There was only one way that could be possible. Ranmaru had told him that Hattori Kenshin had a twin sister. Her name was Mariko. Therefore, this strange and imaginative girl, this girl who had captured Okami's attention with her radiant eyes, who had confused him beyond compare, who had fearlessly sparred with him, using words as well as swords, who had befuddled his senses as no one ever had before, was the sister of the Dragon of Kai. Okami almost laughed at himself, even while he choked through the last of his pain. The last of the burden that came with his power. A burden he'd willingly chosen. In all his life, Okami had never thought to find love. Because he'd never sought it. Love was a burden he did not want. When others had described it to be like an arrow or a bolt of lightning, he'd sneered inwardly. Both were things that could kill. Love, to him, was not a shot to the heart. It was not a sudden, unpredictable thing. Love was a sunrise. A welter of crimson that rose much like a warning, slowly and almost in secret. A secret Okami did not welcome. The girl who'd stolen Okami's heart with her lies and her clever, clever mind was the sister of the Dragon of Kai, Hattori Mariko. Mariko's head was pounding. Over and over, she heard her brother's voice, saw the look on his face. Mariko? When she opened her eyes, the first thing she did was cough. Her hand moved toward her lips as she cringed in pain. Her fingers were wrapped tightly in muslin bindings. The room around her was beautiful. Dark wood and silk-screened sliding doors. The scent infusing the air was familiar, sweet plum and honeysuckle. Mariko was in the tea house in Hanami. Her bandaged hands rustled across the elegant covers as she tried to sit upright, and found Okami positioned nearby. She smiled tentatively. He did not return the gesture. "Did I pass out?" she asked him. His features were not cool, nor were they tinged in amusement. They were filled with nothing. "No." "Why did I sleep for so long?"
"You were badly injured."
"Well..."
"I drugged you."
Her lips pursed. "Why would you..."
"I told you I owed you an injury. Now we're even."
She blinked sluggishly. "What?"
"I'm leaving you here with Yumi. Your hands need time to heal. Don't try to return to the forest. If by some miracle no one saw you that night, it still won't be possible to keep your secret from them for much longer."
"But I wish to go back," she said. I don't want to leave." As soon as she said the words, Mariko was startled to grasp their truth.
"I don't care what you want."
The coldness of his words cut through Mariko's skin, down to the marrow of her bones. "Okami."
"Ren might die of his wounds, and we lost two of our men in the fight."
Mariko's eyes widened. His dark gaze remained heavy-lidded as Okami stared at her unfeelingly.
You could have stopped this from happening.
In all the times the wolf had spoken to her, revealed small glimpses of his truth, she'd never once found him to be grim. And to find him speaking in such a manner about her, it only unnerved Mariko more.
I don't understand what you mean. How could I have stopped this from happening?
Don't lie to me anymore, Mariko. Nothing could drown out the roar in her ears.
What? She stammered.
I heard the Dragon of Kai call you by name. Hattori Kano had a daughter. We heard she was killed in Jukai Forest. Don't tell me you are not she. Don't deny who you are when confronted with the truth. Names have untold power.
You heard?
Mariko stood, fury imbuing her with sudden strength.
You heard she was killed? Don't you mean you were responsible for killing her?
Okami remained so still that Mariko almost reached out to see if time had frozen around her.
Is that why you're forcing me to stay here?
She continued, her voice beginning to tremble. She should have felt ashamed, but she did not.
Because if Ranmaru learns who I truly am, he will try to finish the job he failed to complete a month ago?
Okami unfolded to his feet.
This is the last thing I can do for you. Stay here until you are healed. Then, go on your way.
Answer me!
Mariko stumbled across the covers. She grabbed him by the front of his kusode, trying to hold him still, to force him to answer.
Did you kill my father's men? Did you try to kill me?
Okami pried her hands from his collar, gently pushing her away.
When I return to the forest, I will tell the men everything. If they see you again, they will kill you. Don't look for us. The Black Clan is dead to you.
Tell me,
she cried.
Tell me your name first. Say your name. Admit who you are.
His eyes glittered, the first sign of uncontrolled feeling Mariko had seen since she gained consciousness. She stood tall.
My name is Hattori Mariko.
Okami nodded.
If there ever comes a day I try to kill you, Hattori Mariko, you will know it.
With that, he left, the doors sliding shut behind him with a final snick. It was always possible, however unlikely, that Mariko had been wrong about the Black Clan. But now that she was confronted with the reality of it, she was not sure what to do. The beautiful Maiko, his sister Yumi, entered the room a moment later.
What did you say to him?
Yumi asked.
He won't tell me the truth. He won't tell me why he tried to kill me.
She frowned, her lovely features gathering.
I don't believe he tried to kill you.
Why not? Mariko cried. That's what they do. That's who they are. And now I will never know the truth. They won't let me return to the forest. They won't let me return to...
to the only place I've ever truly belonged.
She began to sob, her words turning ragged. Yumi set down the tray of food in her hands. She knelt beside Mariko.
If you really think that's who Okami is, that that's who Ranmaru is, then you don't deserve to know them anymore, Hattori Mariko.
Lost in the Ashes. Kenshin sat on the ground, his elbows braced against his knees. He stared into the distance, seeing nothing. Tendrils of dark smoke continued to rise from what remained of his family's granary. But he couldn't think about that. He couldn't even consider the fact that he might have seen his sister last night. It wasn't possible. A trick of the smoke, a dance of the wind-whipped flames. Even all thoughts of Mariko were pushed from his mind. Kenshin could think of nothing else but Amaya. She was gone. The fire had killed the only girl he'd ever loved. They'd searched the rubble for her remains and been unable to find anything of significance. At least two other souls had perished in the fire.
Muramasa Amaya would never even have a proper burial. Kenshin would never see those soft gray eyes or hear her musical laughter again. He should have stopped her, should have barred